He requested me to convey his apologies.
Okay.
His DG as well is not well. He couldn't come.
The only problem is we have a member from the special saying, can you take this opportunity to introduce yourself? Let me start with honorable member.
Member
Mona
from Houghton.
I just want to say something before introducing myself. That is in connection with the essence of the DG and also the minister. I think previously in our meeting we already decided that if the minister or the DG or both of them cannot attend the meeting, then they might just put inviting to us, so that we're not going to ask the meeting where the minister and where the DG. We might just ask the representative of the department just to tell them again that is our request for the select committee, if I be honest. Please. My name is Michael De Villiers and I'm from the Western Cape.
My name is Willem Faber and I represent the Northern Cape Club.
Thank you, honourable members. Yeah, we will expect that the Office of the Minister and the DG will find the reasons for not attending to committee. And I think at this stage, let me allow you, this Dr. Yensu, to make a presentation on your, on the FAA report.
Thank you very much, Chair. The square kilometer array, it's called the square kilometer array because the intention is to build a telescope that will have a total receiving surface of 1 square kilometer, which is going to be 100 times more sensitive than any existing telescope. During the next few minutes, I'm going to cover the global SKA developments, what's happening across the African continent and the South African activities. On the global SKA scene, there is an SKA organization which is based in the UK, headquartered in Manchester, and made up of 10 countries. The latest one to join is Sweden, and the next meeting is expected to be in October of 2012 in Australia, in Perth. Now, in terms of the timeline, the decision was made in May 2012 as to how the SKA site would be divided. Between 2012 and 2016 is the pre-construction phase or the preparatory phase. So during that phase there will be no construction but finalization of the details related to the design and configuration of the telescope. Starting the end of 2012 and likely to slip to beginning of 2013 is going to be negotiations between the two hosting countries with the SKA organization on a host agreement and the details thereof. The SKA construction is expected to start in 2016 and end in 2024. Now, within the African continent, we expect the construction of SKA to start in 2016. However, starting this year in 2012, there's going to be a construction of what's called the Meerkat 64 antenna array telescope in the Northern Cape Karoo. In addition, there's what's called the African VLBI network, which is going to be a network of one dish antenna in 9 countries, all linked together to do astronomy. And the construction thereof will start in 2012. There's been funding that has been received from the African Renaissance Fund for 120 million and the DSP is contributing 21 million. However, we still need to raise 200 million rand to complete the African VLBI across 8 countries. In addition to these 3 telescopes, there's also the low frequency array, which South Africa is constructing together with Mauritius, and the construction started last year. Now that I have set the scene, in terms of what's happening, the African VLBI network will have 8 antennas, and 5 of them will be conversions. Now, I'm not sure if the committee recalls, but during the World Cup, when you walk into the stadium, there were these communication dishes that were built outside so that they can link up with each other. Now, there's quite a number of these dishes around the continent which are being disused because it's much more expensive to use the dish antennas than to use optical fiber cable. It's much more cheaper and more efficient to use cable, so these antennas are becoming obsolete. Now, in them becoming obsolete, instead of cashing them for scrap metal, what we have proposed is that they could be converted into radio telescopes, and 5 of them have been identified. So the African VLBI basically would be a combination of conversion and construction of new data. Now, in terms of coordination, the SKA is coordinated through 2 forums that meet twice and once a year. There's the working group, which is made up of government officials and technical experts, and there's the steering committee of director generals and permanent secretaries. And that meeting, the next one after the decision made, is going in September of this year. In addition to that meeting, also in September, there's what's called the African European Radio Astronomy Platform, AREP, workshop. Now let me have to explain what AREP is. Prior to the bid decision, towards the end of last year, there was a request by 5 members of the European Parliament for Europe and Africa to form a partnership in radio astronomy. For that to have happened, there is a condition that for a motion like that to pass, more than 50%, that's 50 plus 1, of the European parliamentarians have to vote in favor of it. And that happened in March of 2012, when members of the European Parliament voted in favor of the African European Radio Astronomy Platform. So the intention when we meet in September is to now activate and start the implementation of the platform. Within South Africa, what we have noticed over the last 3 to 4 months is an increase in the number of astronomers that are interested to come and work in South Africa. Looking at our current capacity, this is certainly a welcome challenge because we certainly will need them. Although you can do the SKA Radio Astronomy Science also anywhere in the world, you don't necessarily need to be in the country that where the telescope is. Starting in March of this year, there's been infrastructure construction or layout in the Carnarvon area in Karoo, and the 64G antenna Meerkat construction is going to start in the second half of this year. Now, for us as a country to be able to protect the investments in the Northern Cape, there is an act which was promulgated in 2007 called the Astronomy Geographic Advantage Act. We have, over the last couple of years, been in the process of doing declarations and draft regulations to restrict activities within the Northern Cape. So far, we have finalized the restrictions or the declarations that will apply on the SALT and the Meerkat site. These are the two farms that have been purchased by the NRF for the construction of the telescope. So within the fence of those two telescopes, that's where the AGA declaration for the core has been finalized. For the remainder of the Northern Cape, we still have quite a bit of work to do in terms of getting the declaration and regulations finalized. In addition to the AUA Act, towards the end of last year, there was a need identified by both the DFT and the South African SKA Project Office to establish a forum with the Farmers Union of the Northern Cape called Agri Northern Cape. So far, we've had several meetings with Agri Northcap just to ensure that they are concerned around communication is addressed, especially in light of the deterioration of the landline access in the area. If you drive to the area, you will not be able to pick up any lines between the poles because the wire is stolen. So there's certainly a need for alternative communication. And we have been working with MTN and Vodacom to provide solutions that allow for the coexistence of people and the radio astronomy in the Northern Cape. And to date, we have helped up to 11 farmers with alternative technology instruments that give them access to a cell phone connection. One of the things that we started in 2010 is the schools competition around the SKA. And the objective really is to create national awareness among high school learners about radio astronomy and square kilometer array and some of the developments that have been happening in South Africa. Because we've noticed that through very active work by some of the more global telescopes, people tend to be more aware of what's happening at NASA and the International Space Station because it's constantly in the news and very little, at least up until last year, was happening in terms of coverage for the square kilometer array in the media. That has improved dramatically since 2011. Now, this year we ran a high school and primary schools competition just to create an awareness. There were six winners per province, and the fifth two prizes in the high schools and the primary schools were laptops and digital cameras. For that prize, we are taking the winning learner's crew to the observatory, or an observatory, closer to the school. With those, I'd like to thank you very much, and hope to take a few questions if at all they are there. Thank you, Chair.
Informative information. We learned a lot from this presentation. It's not only the children or the farmers who don't understand this. All of us, even as members of parliament, need to know more about this aid-hailing program. And at this stage, let me allow members of the committee to hear a question. I will start with Member Mulde, Member Tegilura, Shaba, Member Black.
Thanks, Professor. My first question would be on the number of astronomy researchers that want to work in South Africa. To say, is it because in their countries they are reducing effect on the global warming, so they come and do here what they want, so they achieve whatever. Do we have any conditions rather than absorbing them because we want to push this? There might be something else that makes them to come here. So I don't know whether there's something or just opening up. And if you're opening up, is there any plan of transfer of skills, because you might want them to come because they will help us, but when they go again, you will have to depend on them to say, hey, let's call them back. The other one is on the Northern Cape, the stealing of the cameras. To say, if whilst you are doing the awareness with the school children, then it means also there has to be an awareness to the community. I used to see them, I think in April, March, April, in the English channel. It will be flexing it, but not all of us are having just TV. And now it was only at that period that it has stopped doing it. So they might not think what is the value of those cables. We only see the value in terms of them selling it to other people that will say, oh, it's manna from heaven. Thank you.
Also because we are going through an issue here. I take this opportunity to say that, I think the Honorable Mube is quite right, because we can't just open up for researchers from other countries to come in South Africa without any clear conditions. How are they coming here? What are they going to do? And monitor whatever they are doing. Because we are a country, we have to be sensitive. We don't want to fight like we are part of the party. It's important that we know what they are doing here in South Africa. And also, the issue of the 100 million rand that is still to be raised. Have you identified where the donors that are going to find you for this money? Where are they? And also, the issue of the... what is the department doing around the researchers again, doing here in South Africa for the challenge of the social age of astronomy here in the country? What are the plans that are put in place for that issue? And again, I don't think the department only has to focus on the farmers when it talks of the disturbance that is going to happen in that area. We have to look at other stakeholders. Have other stakeholders been consulted, educated around these issues, re-informed about it? And I think the department should also consider, because you raise an important issue to market today, South Africans sometimes they tend not to be informed of what is happening in the country. Instead, they will know something about NAFTA instead of knowing about the SKA. What kind of education, public education for every South African to know and understand what is the SKA all about? How are they going to benefit out of it?
Thank you. Thank you very much, Jefferson. Just in connection with the construction of the SKA, is there already information about the contractor who will be getting it, or is there already some tender that connection out, so that we don't come in that time and then we have a problem, especially on the consultation, but the public consultation, because there will be government money responsible to be spending on this project. Just that information. And then the other one, say person, in connection with the 200 million rand. I see I already make a note of in my document, page 3. The other countries who will be also be included into this, especially to raise the 200 million rand, so to be raised, is shortfall, new deconstruction in Botswana, Mauritius, Namibia, Mozambique. What will be the responsibility of those countries to just to add to that shortfall on the 200 million? I know that some of them do have some problems, financial problems, but I just want to get that information. Because it cannot only be the responsibility of South Africa to raise that money. And then another chairperson, the other one is in connection with the telephone. If my understanding is correct, the telephone line is stolen. Is that the information? If that is the information, why didn't you allow the provincial government to make use of the fiber? What is that? What is that? Yes. Just because along the N1, as I'm traveling from Cape Town to my house, and also on the N1 from Beaufort West, straight to Bloemfontein. They are installing those lines just to replace the lines running overhead so that they cannot steal it. What is the situation with that connection from the department to assist in that situation? And then in connection with the farmer, the farmers, I think this is a very huge problem for them. They cannot contact make contact with somebody outside the farm, or if there's a problem on the farm. Now, what is the situation in connection with those farms who have the problem of communication outside from their farm to maybe to the town or outside the province and so on? The problem in connection with the communication. What is the situation currently among the farmers? I'm actually looking at an answer on the percentage or a number of farmers who still have that problem of communication, the connectivity through the cell phone. And then in connection with the prices and the schools, you did tell us about the laptop and the camera, digital camera, handed out to the school. Were those cameras and laptops handed over to the school or the individual people? What is the situation? Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, firstly I want to say thanks for the presentation. It is just unfortunate that the rest of the committee was not with our Northern Cape provincial delegation when we did the provincial oversight in the Northern Cape, because I think it would have given insight to the whole committee of what me and Honourable Finclair could have experienced when we went to the whole site. And also, just perhaps the easy explanation from my side, which made it easier for me to understand what SK was about, which is not that scientific, but was like you know, in the beginning people tried to find the smallest object with microscopes and stuff, and that's how they got that. Now we're trying to go and see the biggest things out there. And the thing is, I think a lot of these questions perhaps that have been asked here, if the guy went to the site, they would have understood more. But the only problem that I've got at this moment, to be quite honest, is from my side, is on the communication of the farmers. I really do believe that that might be a bit of a problem for some farmers. I don't know if you've sorted out all the nitty-gritty stuff on that. The communication between farmers, etc. Then the second one I'd like to know, I know that the road's being tarred. I think it's being tarred to the site. When that will be finished. And then the effectiveness of this telescope, because I understood that I know that we are now dividing it between us and Australia. And obviously the piece of the Oberflächte, what's the name of it? Sorry?
Surface.
Yeah, the surface area on which all these telescopes will be standing on is going to be obviously a bit smaller now. Will it still have the same effectiveness than it would have had if we had the whole SKA project? Would we still be able to see in a few years what scientists wanted to see? And then my last question is just, we were also talking as a Northern Cape provincial delegation at that time about trying to get a school or a further education institution very close to that area, specifically in astronomy. If you guys are going to go to FET colleges or perhaps to anyone in that area, surrounding areas, because when people want to go and study in astronomy, that they would be able to go to that facility, which is actually quite close to this scientific FAA project. Thank you, that's all.
My question is about what are the challenges facing this project? The challenges facing this project. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes,
thank you. I
don't want to pretend as if I understand. But I know that I do understand that there is a need for this FKA. But what I want to check with the department here is how does this project, I know that it's there in Northern Cape, how does it benefit us ordinary people from rural areas and farm areas, like it's in Northern Cape, how does people there understand their benefit from this important project? Because I am speaking from this angle, Chair, that we went to as in the Middle East to look at the e-government technology and e-services issues. There, how they work it, how they do it with the IT focus group in Parliament. But I just want to check is there any connection between the SKA, this satellite, with the digital setups that is going to assist that they're going to use to launch the new system they're going to use in our television boxes. Does these things have anything to do with that? Oh, that is a separate project altogether. That's what I want to understand, because I will take it for granted that on the basis of your project, it means that this project is going to facilitate the implementation of the digital
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll try and see them in a sequence.
Influx of of autonomy in Central Africa. And is that going to create a challenge for us, and are we restricting and putting conditions, or are the borders just open for autonomy to go into South Africa? The criteria that is used by the South African SKA program for autonomous that do come to South Africa or that want to come to South Africa is that they have to be the best in the world. You have to satisfy the conditions of the South African SKA program, which has been established by the NRS. Which means that you have to be publishing quite well as an autonomous, and you have to be able to also train students. You cannot just come and do research in South Africa and after the tenure leave the country without training any students. There is a condition that there has to be knowledge sharing and skills transfer linked to the research share program. Second question was around copper theft. Okay, is it the mic? Yeah. Okay. The second question was around the awareness of the local community around the effect of the theft of the copper in the area. Perhaps what I should say first is that the copper that is in the area is probably copper that was there before the square kilometer related activities in the Northern Cape. As the SKA project, we are not using any copper, we're just using optical fiber because we are aware of this national challenge that the country is facing. So the copper that is disappearing is not directly linked to the SKA, but it's for the Northern Cape community. The issue of 200 million rand and how is it going to be raised. At the moment, we are exploring several options which are all linked to the African-European radio astronomy platform and how it could be resourced. And one of the things that we would want to do as part of that platform is to see if we cannot leverage partnership funding from Europe through one of their many instruments. We have a site attaché in Brussels that's assisting us with information on the ground to try and find out which funding instrument will be most feasible to you. I must also say that it's also going to be for the benefit of Europe, for them to actually partner with us in the African DLDI network, because within Europe, there's currently what is called the European DLDI network, and that network is limited to Europe, and when there is an African DLDI network, the two networks can certainly make a single network to create a much bigger operating platform. So you would have the 9 radio telescopes that are in South Africa and those that are in Europe contributing. Now, the strength of VLBR is that the further the dishes are, the better your observation of the sky is at night or during the day, because it's a radio telescope that you need to. So if you look at Cape Town and in Europe, the distance in between, it certainly creates one of the best VLBI networks in the world. It will probably be only second to one that is based in space, because there's very little we can do about the distance where there are dishes in space that are communicating with Earth. So this will certainly be something that is very valuable too. The science of both Africa and Europe. There was a question around how are we growing our astronomers in South Africa. Since 2005, the South African SKA project has had a human capital development program where we provide salaries for undergraduate, postgraduate, and postdoctoral fellows to study at any of the South African universities. To date, we have offered more than 400 bursaries. I believe my last count was around 412 bursaries that we have issued since 2005 in the area. But what we have also started is that we realize that these technical experts will find it very difficult to operate without the technical support. So there's also a technicians program that is started for South Africans. There's another one also for our African partner countries to provide the technician support for the telescope, because the astronomer with a PhD will certainly not be spending his time well dealing with technician level activities. There has to be an understanding of sharing of responsibilities. But I think in addition to that, once you have a technician that's been working on a telescope for several years, they get to understand it quite well. And that's something that's very important, that as the astronomers are coming and going to the telescope, we have a single resource that understands and operates the telescope. For the people around the site in the Northern Cape, that is the Carnarvon and Williston towns, we have started an artisan program for them to train at Morelholu in Kimberley. So there is that artisan program which started last year. This year we have 15 students that are in this artisan program. And what we notice is that the moment they qualify, they just get scooped up, because there is a definite need within the Carnarvon Western area because of the SKA for people with artisan expertise. It's not all of them that do come to the project. Some of them go elsewhere. But the fact that some of them can stay in Carnarvon and Williston certainly helps our cause as well, to get the community involved in the knowledge capital activities around the project, not just the construction labor work and the supply of services in the hospitality industry. There was also a question around engagement with the local communities beyond the farmers. Since 2010, we've had stakeholder manager, an SKA stakeholder manager that is engaging with the community on a daily basis. He's based in Carnarvon. His work is to get to understand the community-related issues, communicate the necessary information, provide the update to the communities. Now, he has established, together with the SKA project office, two fora. One fora is based in Carnarvon, which is a stakeholder forum. It's open to members of the public, but there are also government officials that attend those meetings, and people from farming communities are part of the stakeholder forum that we do once a month, just to keep the information up to date around the SKA, around the Astronomy Geographic Advantage Act, and a new development that people might have discovered through the media. So that's something that is ongoing, and it will keep going, because we have realized that it's actually a very useful platform to have, because it also allows the community to ask questions about things that they are not aware of, and become better informed about what the SKA can and cannot do. Nationally, we as the DST have, since the beginning of last year, stepped up our communication You might have picked it up through various mediums, but these papers are certainly very helpful for us. We've also started a campaign where we send leaflets to Shizuo centers. Now, these leaflets basically provide the simplest explanation of astronomy that I can imagine, that explain what astronomy is, what a telescope is. Because one of the things that we realized as people that work in the DST and in SKA is that we actually assume that people know what a telescope is. It's not general public knowledge. It's information that we have to share. Now, these leaflets are in all of the official languages. And what we do is that we talk to the Tucson Center, especially those that are either in the capital towns or the ones that are closest to FKA sites, so the ones that are in the Carnarvon area. The idea here was to try and communicate in the local languages so that you can really simplify to the absolute basics. So what we do is that we request from a Tucson center how many languages do they require for us to send them through, English and Afrikaans or standard, and then the additional ones that it requested. And it looks like by the end of this year we have run out of the rest batch of leaflets. We then have to start thinking of how do we communicate the next set of messages. The FKA tender contract has not been drafted as yet. There is no draft of the contract or of the terms of reference for the square kilometer array. What's going to happen between 2012 and 2016 is going to be a process where the configuration of the dish is finalized. The design of the dish is locked, so every time astronomers see, they have new ideas about what is that can be done, but involving engineers in this is lock certain design to really proceed with the construction, which is why we also need engineers in the project to take the lead in construction, right? So astronomers do fantastic science, but when it comes to telescope construction, it's not exactly their area of expertise. Right, there was also a question around the partner countries and their contribution to the African VLBI network. The partner countries are expected to provide the land, the infrastructure, and the operational budget for these telescopes. What we offer them is the actual dish antenna itself. And it is expected that once it's constructed, the telescope will be handed over to a country, and that is why you have a technician training program. And the technicians that are from those countries, we hope that they'll be able to go back home and maintain these facilities.
So,
first,
unfortunately, we have two important presentations, your presentation and also the following presentation. I'll give you a 5 minutes to stop what I'm talking about.
Thank you very much. I think that I should end with the response on the two questions related to the farmers and their communication. Now, in terms of our understanding of the situation, based on the stakeholder manager that engages with the local communities on a daily basis, we at this point have resolved the currently existing cell phone communication problems. Everyone that requires the service, we are aware of them, and they have received help from MTN or Vodacom to help them get reconnected. what we're doing is that we provide subsidy for the actual handset itself, but the usage thereof is at the cost of the owner of the handset. And I think, perhaps, Madam Chair, let me stop at that. Thank you very much for the invitation.
Thank you very much, Doctor. This information is very, very important to us and very interesting. We could say that we are listening carefully to everything you are saying and would like to know more about the issue. But at this stage, I would like to thank you very much. And we will further communicate on follow-up presentation or information that we require as a committee. And I think if you can maybe in a return form supply us with the information on the artisan program, I'm sure the committee will be interested in that program. If there are kids in other places, in other provinces, who are interested in this field, want to apply, what can they do, how to apply, and then all that information, we would really appreciate it if you can get. So, on that note, I would like to thank you very much.
I also have to raise the issue of the government telling its ways of student taking to my team for going to get the answer from the
Can you quickly repeat it so that you can
know the challenge the issue of
the program. Okay. Thanks a lot and right safe to back home. Okay, I'll hand over to Honorable Ranto to take over the next session. Thanks a lot, members, for your cooperation. Good afternoon, honorable members and the officials from the department and the ones from parliament. We are going to start with our meeting. We are a few minutes late. We want to give enough time to this bill. We want to give all our attention to this bill. And I want everybody to be settled before we start. And usually, I'm a teacher by profession, and when I speak, nobody speaks while I'm speaking. So I would love that everybody listens to what I'm saying. We are going to start, but I want everybody to be settled before we start.
really, then I'm quiet now. Anybody can talk.
I would not. Are you ending first the introductions or can I tell you this?
We haven't started yet.
I'm waiting on the rapper.
Talking about this language deal, and we had no information, so we want to listen carefully. Let me welcome everybody this afternoon in this meeting. And welcome the members. It's been a long time. We've been separated for a long time as members. So we are all there from the reserve and the other and on a holiday reserve and constituency work. We are back in parliament. Now we are doing the parliamentary work. I welcome you all, honourable members. The Department of Arts and Culture, I also welcome you, DT. And your team, the parliamentary staff that is amongst us, I also welcome you. I hope we are going to be part of the demo. We are all going to take part. If you have to take part silently, you will take part silently. If you have to deliberate with us, you will do that. I am Zukiswa Ranto. A single person, a whip of the committee. From Eastern Cape. I'm representing Eastern Cape in the National Council of Provinces. I'm the provincial whip of the delegation of Eastern Cape. Today I'm an single person in this committee. I will give over to the honourable members. I'm not sure. Are we new? Do we need really to introduce? Let us introduce ourselves. They are new. Okay. Okay, I'll give over to you, honourable.
Member Mnube, representing Gauteng's interest at the NCOP.
Member
Hartman from Nagos Province.
Michael de Villiers from Ibiska. Willem Faber from the Northern Cape. Willem Faber from the Northern Cape province.
Sipho Plaki from the Northwest province.
Thabo Makunyan from Limpopo.
Thank you, honorable members. I'll give over to the department for introduction.
Madam Chair, yes, I would just like to, before we do that, perhaps just pose a question, because it's actually quite important that I put in a motion to Mr. Mashlangu on the specific bill, and the motion was that it was taking back to the joint tagging mechanism so that we can change it from Section 75 to Section 76 bill, because it's actually applied to provinces, and it's not a national bill. This bill should actually be... This is the request that I sent to Mr. Mashlangu, because I really believe that this bill has got a, it applies to provinces, not just to national. So for that reason, I would just like to perhaps get the review if it was handled, or what the situation is like. Please don't share.
Oh, thank you, Honourable Father, but let them introduce themselves before they respond to the question, if they have the response of the question.
Thanks, Chair. Good afternoon to the members of the committee. My name is Professor. So I'm a teacher for agriculture. I'm accompanied by colleagues next to me, Dr. Mulelo Chowene, who is the head of the National Language Service. Next to Dr. Chowene is Mr. Stan Jongobo, who is the head of the DG's office. On my left is Ms. Masia Pkhanedi, who is the legal advisor to the minister. And next to him is Mr. Stan Kassan, who is the parliamentary officer for the minister. At the back, in the extreme left, Mr. Lodwick Bekolevipi, who is the DG's parliamentary officer. Next to him is Mr. Jabulos Ebe, our cultural economist. And next to him is Ms. Koke Zonagedi, who is the head of special projects in the department. We also have a representative from the stabilizers, Mr. Mamusi Ngomo, who is here to help us. And in fact, I would like to defer the question to the stabilizers around the tagging of this bill. I don't know, Melus, if you've got any view on this.
Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Members. I think it will be important for me to make remarks with regard to tagging of the bill. When we were looking at the bill during the drafting stage, we had intense arguments in our office, specifically with regard to tagging. Because if you look at the languages, you can see that they are in a schedule, you know, that can make someone attempt to say that, no, it might be 76, you know. But we considered many issues before we take the bill. We looked at the provisions. We looked if they affect the provinces in substantial measure. We took into consideration the latest judgment of Tongwane, the Constitutional Court judgment. That is the main judgment, which is the latest one, which explains fully the issue of tagging. Because if you understand before, we were using what we called pit and substance rules. When we tag the bill, we are no longer using that. It's a pity that I was expecting that it will be just a briefing today, you know. But I can explain because I was expecting that it will be just a briefing by the department. But I can explain because I was deeply involved in drafting of the bill. At our initial stages, we really thought that it is a 76. After we studied the judgment thoroughly and applied what has been said by the judges to the bill, we came into the conclusion that the bill is Section 75.
No, I'm not going to give you a time for follow-up. I just wanted to give the legal advisor from Parliament, Ms. Barbara, to give us a response. I'm sorry you were not introduced, because when the DG was introducing everybody, I thought he introduced you also. Can you please start introducing yourself?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good afternoon, members. I'm Barbara Lewis. I'm the parliamentary legal advisor assisting with this bill. I share my colleagues from the Sagro Advisors Division. I'll also discuss this in depth. We specifically also looked at Dongolani and the fact that it substantially affects the province's interest when you look at the Schedule 4. And if you look at the Schedule 4, the concurrent legislation is allowed here. The provision specifically says language policies and regulations of official language to the extent that the provisions of Section 6 of the Constitution expressly confer upon provincial legislative competence. The contents of the bill, as we went through the provisions one by one, didn't touch on that legislative competence of the provinces. The provinces are still free to regulate the issue at a provincial level. This bill will not infringe on that power. So in the sense that this bill doesn't go into that specific scope of Section 6, it remains at 75. So we are in agreement as a society of advice that it should be 75.
Thank you, Madam Barbara. But, yeah, I think we are all on the same level now. We can continue. Our next item in the agenda is to give over to the department for the program.
Thank you for the opportunity to do the committee on this bill. We recall that the bill started the national language bill, but during the deliberations in the Victoria Committee of the National Assembly, it became clear that it might be easier to call the bill the use of official languages bill rather than the national language bill. Just to give Chair a context, because we take the context for this bill from the Constitution. Section 6 of the Constitution provides for a number of things. One is that it establishes 11 official languages. Secondly, it creates an obligation on the state to take critical and positive measures to elevate and advance the status and the use of indigenous languages. Thirdly, it places an obligation on national and provincial governments to use at least two official languages for the purposes of government business, which means that it places a responsibility on every provincial and national department to be able to interact with the citizens on at least two official languages. Then it places an obligation on national and provincial governments to regulate and monitor the use of official languages by legislative and other measures, and requires that all official languages should enjoy parity of esteem and are treated equitably. And obviously, it also creates the Pan-South African Languages Board, the PANSAL. Now, coming to the bill, I think it's important to also give a bit of a historic context to where we find ourselves. There was an initial draft of the National Languages Bill in 2003, which went to cabinet in preparation for it to enter the parliamentary process. Cabinet referred the bill back to the Department of Arts and Culture, and rather requested the department to advance multilingualism through non-legislative means. You'd recall that when we spoke about Section 6 of the Constitution, it speaks about legislative and other means of promoting multilingualism. The cabinet felt that let's try other means of promoting multilingualism rather than multilingualism rather than legislating it. In 2010, a certain Mr. Lawrence decided to take this matter up with the courts and actually approached the court saying that government is not fulfilling its mandate in terms of the Constitution. The matter was argued in court, and on the 8th of March, the court found that, the court found that the state had not acted in line with the Constitution, and therefore gave the Minister of Arts and Culture 2 years the Minister as well as Parliament, 2 years to pass legislation dealing with languages. The 2 years expired on the 8th of March this year. However, in anticipation for that, in March we went back to the court and requested an extension of the court date. At that time, the bill was actually being debated by the Committee on Arts and Culture, court gave us an additional 6 months, which means that by the 8th of September, this bill should have been passed by the Parliament. The object of the bill is to regulate and monitor the use of official languages for government records by national government. It promotes the parity of esteem and equitable treatment of the official languages of the Republic and facilitates equitable access to services and information of national government, and promotes good language management by national government for efficient public service and administration and meets the needs of the public. The fundamental philosophy behind the bill is that people have better access to services and govern business if they can be served in a language that they understand better. And really that is what the bill in its royal form is trying to achieve. The bill applies to all national departments, public entities, as well as public enterprises. It does not apply to provincial government, and I think this is the issue that the parliamentary legal advisor was raising, that provinces have the right to legislate on the use of languages by provincial government. In fact, two provinces already have such legislation, Western Cape and Limpopo. Other provinces are somewhere in the process of legislating. Some provinces have got language policies rather than legislation. But this bill does take precedence over any inconsistent provision of any other law on official languages by national government. If there is a law that says you can only use a particular language for the purposes of government business, it will take precedence over that. Section 4 provides that every national department, national public entity, and national public enterprise must adopt a language policy regarding its use of official languages for government purposes within 18 months of commencement of this act, or such other period as the minister may prescribe, but such extension may not exceed a period of 6 months. Now, essentially what this means is that once the bill has been passed by Parliament, each department has 18 months with the possibility of a 6 month extension. At the worst case, by the end of 24 months after the passage of the bill, every department, every public entity, and every public enterprise shall have adopted a language policy. The language policy must comply with the provisions of Section 6 of the Constitution, which I read out earlier, that it must choose languages that the citizens can interact with that department on. It identifies at least three official languages that the national department, national public entity or enterprise will use for business purposes. You notice that the Constitution makes a provision for at least two. But because of the contextual situation we find ourselves in South Africa, in deliberations with the Portfolio Committee, it was raised to at least three languages. However, obviously, any department or any entity decides to use a number of languages that they are comfortable with, but it's got to be at least three. It's got to stipulate how official languages will be used, among other things, in communication with the public, on official languages, government publications, and intergovernmental communication. And of importance, it's got to describe how the national department, that particular department, public entity or enterprise, will communicate with members of the public whose language of choice is not on the official languages contemplated in Subsection B or South African sign language. Which means that if a department of arts and culture decides that they will do business in English, in Sesotho, and in Xhosa, if I am an African speaker, I have a right to know how I will be helped in Afrikaans by the department, even though Afrikaans is not one of the languages of choice. Mm-hmm. Now, the language policy will have to prescribe why that happens. Just as an example, we may say that, if you want communication in Afrikaans, you shall give us 3 days or 5 days within which we will translate these things into your language of choice. But I think it's important to note this because a lot of the public information or the public debate that has been going on has been a bit misinformed. A lot of people are saying, well, why don't you just use 11 languages? Because the country has 11 languages. What happens if my language is not a language that is chosen? There is a provision in the law that says the language policy shall explain how I am going to be served in my language if my language is not the language of choice. And obviously, the provision is made specifically for sign language. The language policy will also describe how members of the public can access the language policy itself, how complaints mechanism to enable members of the public to lodge complaints regarding the use of official languages. If officials in a department, despite its language policy, are refusing to serve the public has a right to complain, and the language policy shall deal with how those complaints are going to be handled. It provides also for any other matters that the minister may deem necessary to prescribe. The language policy should be published in the Gazette as soon as reasonable and practical, but within 90 days of its adoption. In identifying at least three official languages included in subsection 2B, every national department, public entity, or public enterprise must take into account its obligation to take practical and positive measures to elevate the status and advance the use of indigenous languages of historically diminished use and status in line with the Constitution. Probably the biggest debate has always been around this particular status of the bill, about how do we treat languages that have a historically diminished use and status. And this is the formulation that eventually was agreed upon in the portfolio committee. Continuing with the language policy, every department, public entity, or public enterprise must ensure that a copy of its language policy is available on request at all its offices. If the Department of Home Affairs has an office in Hamachatane in Limpopo, a member of the public has a right to access that policy at that particular office. So all offices should have the policy, and displays at all its offices a summary of its language policy in such a manner and place that can be read by the public. So even the person who may not necessarily know the policy of the department should be able to see it displayed in summary form, and therefore should be able to demand the rights that accrue to them on the basis of the language policy. The minister may also establish a national language unit in the department and ensure that it's provided with the human resources, the administrative and other resources necessary for its effective functioning. I think it's important to make a distinction here between the establishment of a national language unit in the Department of Agriculture, and we'll get into what it's supposed to do the next provision, which is for each department to have its own language unit. The language unit in the National Department of Agriculture will advise the Minister on policy and strategy matters in relation to the regulation and monitoring of the use of official languages by national government, for the functions provided in terms of Section 8 for the department, which is the actual language policy of the Department of Arts and Culture itself, as well as perform any other functions that the minister may prescribe in regulation. Now, the next section then deals with the establishment of language units in each department. Every national department, entity, or enterprise must establish a language unit and ensure that it is provided with the necessary resources for effective function. The units in departments will advise the responsible accounting officer and accounting authority on the development, adoption, and implementation of the language policy for that department, public entity, or public enterprise. It will monitor and assess the use of official languages by national department, national public entity, or enterprise, and monitor and assess compliance with the language policy of another department, of the national department, public entity, and public enterprise concerned. It will also compile and submit a report to the minister and to the Pan-African Languages Board in terms of Section 9. Section 9 requires that an annual report on the use of languages should be submitted to PANSAL as well as to the Minister of Arts and Culture. The language unit is also responsible to promote parity of esteem and equitable treatment, all official languages of the Republic, and facilitate the equitable access to services and information of the department or entity. Promote good language and management as well as perform any other functions that a minister may prescribe in regulation. The monitoring of the use of languages. The minister is responsible for the monitoring of official use of languages for national government. Every department, entity, or public or public enterprise must submit a report to the minister and to council annually on the activities of its language unit, the extent to which its language policy has been implemented, as well as any complaints and how these complaints have been dealt with, as well as other matters which the minister may prescribe. The minister on an annual basis shall table in the National Assembly a report of the status of official languages for government or the use of official languages for government purposes by any government, by national government, as well as public entities and enterprises. The minister may also establish intergovernmental forums as well as intergovernmental forums to promote general coordination, cooperation, and consultation, to coordinate, align, and monitor implementation of language policies, as well as to perform any other function that the minister may prescribe in the regulation. Such forums, when the minister establishes such forums, he will determine their composition, the terms of reference, convening of the meeting, as well as determine any other matter necessary for their effective function. Once again, another area which has been a point of contention is that the minister on application by a national public entity or a public enterprise listed in terms of Schedule 3 of the PFMA.
Remember, we have established the others are listening and the others are making noise. So I don't know how are we going to ask questions if we do that. Because there are people sitting next to you as you have established.
Application, the minister may grant exemption on application by public, by entities or enterprises. The application exemption must be in manner and in the form prescribed by the minister. And if a minister exempts a public entity or enterprise from the application of Section 7, which is the application, the section that requires the establishment of the language policy, the language unit, that public enterprise must assign a senior employee to perform the functions of a language unit. And finally, the regulations, the minister may, after consultation with council, make regulations which are obvious and not inconsistent with the provisions of this Act. That will be on the form and content of the language policy, the establishment of the language unit and the time frames, the form and content of the report, the manner and time frames for submitting applications for exemptions, as well as any other matter which may be required, which may be permitted to be prescribed. Any matter which the minister may deem necessary for the implementation of the Act. And in making those regulations, the minister must first publish the proposed regulations in the Gazette for public comment, allow a period of 30 days for such comment, and after considering such comment, he may finalize the regulation. Then, essentially, and that is the form of the bill as it was adopted in the National Assembly last week. Thank you.
Thank you, Kuti, for the briefing on the bill. Now I will give time to the members to clarity speaking question on the briefing. We will deal with it later on the briefing today. on it. Your hand was up, Honorable Mose, Honorable Rosso, Honorable Bolo, Honorable De Villa, Honorable Faba, Honorable Banan Plati.
No, thanks, Honorable Acton. I just want to say that there's a fund here. This is intended for national department, national entities, and not intended for provincial departments and their entities. I want to take an example here. If the monitoring sort of whether it is there or not. Let me take housing. You have Department of Justice, you have Department of Labor, in housing. And then you have Department of Arts and Culture. Does it mean that with the Department of Labor, yes, you can go and monitor for the business. With the concurrent one, the Department of Arts and Culture, they can resolve it at whatever level, whether there is two or one. Is that the implication to say only there? Then a layman in whether in Nadal or Arizona, when a person goes to the Department of Agriculture and you are served in an English and Afrikaans, and the language quality stays only two, then it is it adding value or is it opening up access to people or not? Because if you only say only national entities, how about the provincial entities and provincial government? Thank you.
Honorable Roth.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, mine is on the exemption. Let me say I'm a layman. I don't have the PFMA with me now. I don't know what to say, but I really need to an explanation to a layman about the exemptions, wholly or part, and what does the PFMA say, because it's only quoted here, and I don't have it, so that I can the exemptions. I need clarity. What's happening? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mama. I'm covered by Honorable Mose because my focus was there.
Honorable De Villa.
Yes, Jefferson, I'm very concerned in relation to this bill. On the legislative context, places an obligation on national and provincial governments to use at least two official languages for the purposes of government. That is the one. Then the other one in relation to that one is requires that all official languages enjoy parity of esteem and are treated equitably. Now, only this two paragraph is now actually in such a situation where it does not speak to each other. The one is obligation to two languages. And here, the other one enjoys parity of esteem. That is in connection with the official language. Can the department just explain the difference between those? Because my understanding is, if the Constitution of South Africa is saying that is actually the law, no other law is higher than what is saying in the South African Constitution. Now, in these two paragraphs, it's somewhat a problem for myself and for my understanding in connection with this book. Then Honorable Chairperson, the other one is on page number 3, again, to promote comparative esteem and equitable treatment of the official languages of the Republic. Now, this bill would allow now government to communicate with the community in at least not less than three languages. Again, it is not the situation. There is no marriage between what the Constitution of South Africa is saying and the bill also. Maybe you can connect this one to my first question also. because I have a huge problem in understanding of all this stuff. And then on our chairperson, there's another one. That is actually in connection with if the Western Cape government is saying that the official languages is already there is three, that is Afrikaans, English and Xhosa. Right? Now people in the Western Cape with another language have a problem with the reading and the access of information from the provincial government in that situation. Now, the Western Cape are going to say to those people in the community, in our constitution, it is now that we can communicate with you only in three languages. I must now take a long route to go to the Western Cape government and to the court so that they can communicate with me in my language where I can understand. I must go to the court. It will take 6 months, a year, 2, 3 years, 4 years. But the information I want to access is actually to apply for something so that I can get some opportunity to get some work or in relation to just a simple, just a simple one. What will actually compel the government in the Western Cape to give me that information in a very short time frame? 3 days is a very long time in life. Thank you, Jacob.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As we are all representing provinces, I think that is why it is so close to our heart that we're sitting and talking about this. And, you know, you actually saying that I have to stay with this presentation, and that's exactly what I'm going to say here. If you look on page 5, and this is why we've got such a beautiful constitution, it says, a language policy adopted in terms of subsection 1, it doesn't say it may, it says it must. A, comply with the provision of section 6.3 of the constitution. Now, if you're going to look at it, it says provinces have a right in terms of section 6.3 of the constitution, read the schedule 4 of the constitution, to regulate and develop official languages in their provinces. It doesn't say it may, it must. So please, I'm going to read it again to you. Provinces have a right in terms of section 6.3 of the constitution, read the schedule 4 of the constitution, to regulate and develop official languages in their own provinces. So that makes it a provincial issue and not a national issue. That makes it a section 76 issue and not a 75 issue. And it doesn't say may manager, it says must. Now I'd like our legal people to look at that and then reapply your minds to this, and then what I've read here, then please give me an outcome before we leave here today. Thank you very much.
You don't need to be that
bold.
Yeah, I know you've got help, but you don't talk like that. Honorable Pradip.
Oh, thank you very much, Chair. Chair, mine is, I just want to find clarity seeking. I just want to check the implication, if any implication that this bill have on teaching and learning occurring. My understanding is that language you learn it from home, from school, that's the basis. If it doesn't have an implication there, then I do not have a problem if it's decided up there. I would say why. Because to me, my thinking says to me, this does confirm what I know I've been subjected to. In my olden school days, I've been subjected to 3 languages. Yeah. I've been doing my home language, first additional and second additional language. It was compulsory. But other schools, I'm just putting a practical level, and other areas, affluent areas, we're just doing both maybe English and Africa. One is first home language, one additional language. So we've been, this what the bill is suggesting is a long stage school. What was happening to mostly disadvantaged people, subjected to at least compulsory languages. My students have 3 languages, I'm sure my equals have that situation. except those who came after us who have gone to affluent schools, they have two languages. So I'm just saying, if this situation, the situation on this language bill, does not address that area I'm concerned about, then there will be a serious problem. Two is that, how does this bill talk to? Because I know it's emanating from the Constitution of South Africa. In the learning institution, there's also Schools Act. The Schools Act, in most cases, in institutions, gives the school governing body power to decide on school languages. So the national competence would say three is compulsory. I want you to see the technicality here. Then the school situated in a fluent area will say, okay, three we accept. They will have your English, home language, your Afrikaans as second additional, you will maybe MNA as second additional. Which gives now a problem. So the child that comes from the far corner to come and accept what he sometimes they presume that it's better education. So this situation is accessibility the problem. Like I said, vice versa. A school that they have terminated home language or in an area where there's a lot of in fact closer speaking people will then decide to choose not closer language, decide to choose another additional language and create, I know that if there are practical situations which are threatening to go to court currently at the level in school, for me, which create problems. That is why I'm saying, I just want to find out how far do you have powers to influence these things in teaching and learning platform, because it's where the problem is. Up there, I juggle around and teach myself in Zulu. I'm not a Zulu speaking person. I communicate with people properly in Zulu. But what about those ones who want to access services from government, are there, poor, and how are they going to access that service if they are not privileged to this situation? This is what I wanted to get into. The last one is on the exemption. To me, if you talk about exemption, it's an option. It means, because we're saying three languages, but if I feel that I want to be exempted, I can apply and say, no, look, I understand your law says I must have three, but the contextual factors and circumstances does not allow me to have that three. I want to be exempted on one. Is that exemption applying to that? What kind of exemption is this? Because I am not sure the monetary exemption we're talking about yet is an exemption to use a third language or a second language. And then further to say, why can't we have a law that has a straight application to say, look, there's three languages, this is what you must comply with. The application must be straightforward that we need three languages, no option to ask for an exemption for if you don't want to use it.
Okay, thank you, Honorable Chair. But I would two questions of clarity. The first one was about the units in the language. Okay, no, it's in general. Yeah. I've got two questions. One is about the languages unit. There is one in the department on page 8. I don't know, is S5, is it section 5?
Yes.
Okay, established in terms of section 5, that is the department, the unit in the Department of Arts and Culture. And then there is, that is in terms of section 5 and 6. And then there is section 7, where it says every department must establish a language unit. a language unit. Now, the relationship then that will exist in between the unit established in other departments and the unit established in terms of Section 5 in the Department of Arts and Culture. What will be the relationship between the two? Because maybe they are established in terms of two separate sections of the Act, of the field. And then my other question, it was made of clarity. It's the same question that was asked by Honorable Flaky, but now I was asked it from another angle. I don't know if I'm wrong and correct, that this law, this bill, it applies to the department, the national department. And then when it applies to the national department, then okay, everything in here holds. But then in terms of, as it applies in the schools, for instance, or in those areas where the provinces have got jurisdiction, then what they come up with will apply, like in schools, let's say in schools and so on. There, what the province comes up with will apply. I'm asking this question because I was thinking that now in areas like, in the past, areas like Shawera, we know that in Shawera, it's a way to, they speak mainly Tsonga. Yeah. So there may not be any need to teach Zulu there. And then in another area, you may find that Zulu is the predominant language, then they would teach Zulu in that area, and so on and so on. So, but in some other areas, for instance, that was because of apartheid, by the way, in the past. Because it confined Tonga speaking people here and Zulu there and so on. So now, is it not going to be possible for people in those areas to decide to go take five languages? And then for people then to choose, for the beneficiaries to choose which language they want to learn. In one school you can teach five languages, three indigenous languages, and then the people who are studying there can then choose which one they will take or whatever. Now, if that applies, but my understanding is that is controlled more by the province, not by this Act. So this Act applies to national departments and national entities. So that, I don't know whether that's my other thing is correct.
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Hartman. If you can explain again the reasons or what is that really informs the national department in the choice of three languages, which is the population, something else. The second question is on indigenous language. What is the definition of the indigenous languages? I can't find it here on the list here. That is here in front of us. If you can give us the definition of the
Thank you, honorable members. I will give you another round. I just wanted to ask one question from my side. Is the bill deals with the language? I'm not sure, you know, I am a Xhosa-speaking woman. And I'm not sure what does the bill say in pronunciation, if there is any need of pronunciation. I'm saying this because when you talk to people and when you want to translate something to people, you might call a name that this person something else. So I'm not sure what is the thing saying about pronunciation. I don't hear anything. And usually language goes also with other people say there is no school for pronunciation, that's what they say, but in our language, as Kosa speaking, because we need a school for pronunciation. I don't know why. Let me stop there. I think the house becomes ungoverned. I'll give over to the department to respond.
Thank you, and thanks to my members for those questions. Perhaps let me, I'll make a couple of remarks and then I'll ask my colleagues to answer some of these. Let me just say that, you know, if things were ideal in the country, we would look up on business called 11 million. But we are not in an ideal situation. There are serious issues that we still have to deal with. There are issues around the development of languages that where investment has not been made to develop those languages. Mm-hmm. There are issues of skills that need to be dealt with. There's a whole range of the development of terminology and all those things which still need to be dealt with, which does not allow us to use all official languages for all governments. I mean, if you do the Constitution actually says that we've got to consider practicality in determining the numbers of languages and the usage of languages. I think it's important to make a point because that's the idea of it, that in fact we should be pursuing. And at a particular point in time, hopefully we'll get there, but we're not there yet. The second comment which I'd like to make is that the Constitution gives a number of obligations on government. In the first instance, it says government must develop languages, particularly those languages that have a diminished use and value, which means those are languages where sufficient investment has not been made in the past for the development of those languages. Now, the development of language is important for its own sake and not necessarily for just the sake of government business. And I think it's important to make that distinction because when the Constitution speaks about language generally, and then the Constitution speaks about language for the purposes of government business, the choices that we are making in this field are specifically for doing business with government. And that's really the distinction the different sections of the Constitution are speaking about. There were a number of questions around the language of instruction. The language of instruction is governed by another law, which is dealt with by the Department of Education. This bill does not deal with language of instruction in the school system. However, this bill also applies to the Department of Education. So in doing business with the Department of Education, we say that what are the languages that you will do business with as a Department of Education? But that's different from the language of instruction. That is dealt with in terms of other legislation, which the Department of Education regulates. There were a couple of questions around the exemption. Section 12 deals with exemption from the application of Section 7. Section 7 says every department, public entity, and public enterprise shall establish a language unit. That is the one section that the minister may grant exemption on, which means that the minister may decide that, well, you may not establish a language unit, but you will have an official, a single person, who will take that responsibility for carrying out the duties that the language unit is supposed to carry out. That's the only exemption that the minister may grant. But the exemption, the chosen of languages are part of the act does not empower the minister to grant such exemption. torturing the couple of many specific questions that I've raised.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Honorable Member. Details covered quite a number, but if I may just reiterate the issue about the application of the visa. As we all understand, citizens of the country are just citizens of the country. Not like this one is a provincial person, the other one is a national person, the other one is a minister. The whole issue lies in how do we do business, how does a national government do business with every citizen. Not necessarily with the national people, with the official people, because they are not such. And then the distinction becomes clear if we approach it from that way or if we look from that angle. To say that you go to a national department will have its own ways of doing business with you. But you go to a provincial department, you'll find provincial department having a beer, having its own way of doing business with you. But that is not going to be inconsistent with this one. And also just to add and say that all provincial departments or most of the provincial departments have been approached by the very same honorable lawyer, to work on their legislation. And as we are speaking, they are busy doing that. Some are finalizing the policies, most of the policies are finalized. But also, they felt that it would make a perfect sense for them to begin to work on their legislation once this one has been passed, because they are also trying to avoid a situation where there will be inconsistencies between the two. But coming to the issue of education that GD already has touched upon, there is a policy approved by Cabinet for the Department of Education, which stipulates the issues of which languages must be learned and so on in school. And that policy is called the Language in Education Policy. It's usually abbreviated as LEAP. So this does not interfere with that as it has been indicated. And also I want to talk about the issue of the court, of going to court. If only three languages have been identified, because we should keep on saying if, because it doesn't say three languages must be identified. There's at least three, means it can be more than three. But if three identified, that section, which is section 4B, identified at least three official languages, should always be read in conjunction with section G, 4D. It says that particular department, national department, national enterprise, national public entity, will describe how a national department, national public entity, and so on will communicate with members of the public whose language of choice is not contemplated. In other words, whose language of choice is not one of the three. But the example that DG gave earlier of whatever, 3 days, what, it's not something that is written. That is going to come out in the policy, when the policy is being crafted, it will be very specific as to how. The how here is not given. It's just indicated that there will be an indication of how those who do not speak one of those three will be searched. And then, also there is a question of, I think question of exemption has been indicated, recorded. But it only refers to the establishment of the language. It is not referring to the use of three or how many. And then on the issue of the relationship between the language unit in the National Department, which is Arts and Culture, as well as the language unit in other national departments, public entities, public enterprises, and so on. What has been indicated under each is that those language units, among other things, will advise the minister and will monitor and assess the use of official languages in that particular department. The same applies to the language units in other government departments. So if, say, for instance, the Department of labor. That means that language unit will, amongst other things, advise the accounting officer or the accounting authority, who is the minister of that particular department. And we also monitor and assess the use of official languages in that particular department when it comes to doing business with the members of the public. And then there is also the question of indigenous languages that the bill deals with official languages. Or what I wanted to say about this is that the bill, as it is indicated even from the title, is the use of official languages. We are all aware of the fact that the official languages are only 11. But that does not necessarily mean that other indigenous languages, that is, languages which originated here in South Africa, are what we call are not important. But the bill is specific about the use of official languages. Well, of course, the issue of the orthography of the pronunciation and so on, that has been explained. That's not a matter of the classroom. Yeah, really, it doesn't help to get to the year. Thank you.
Just a question. That would be with this section. Oh, I mean, I'm not sure colleagues are ready to deal with section 75.
If the committee may just allow me to just give us 5 minutes with my colleague there, Barbara, so that we can have a short discussion outside regarding this issue of shaming.
All right, but we will continue asking questions to the department. I'm not sure if that's not going to affect you. It's not going to affect you. Okay, we will allow you to work after. There's a follow-up question from Honorable Mugunyane. Mugunyane. Okay. Okay. Mugunyane. Honorable Mube. Honorable Zanzi.
Oh, okay. My question actually was if these two entities, the one in the Department of Agriculture and the other unit in the other department, are on the same level and doing the same thing and not in any way, why are they established in terms of two separate sections of the bill? And then my question is that this bill is under the Department of Agriculture. And then now the bill or the issue, the subject of languages, goes under agriculture. And then the Department of Labor, just to use the language, and all the other departments. So is there any way in which the units in the other department will be reporting or liaising with the unit, which is actually established? I think it's a different kind of unit in the Department of Agriculture, because it's established under a different section of it. I think it's under Section 5 or something. Section 5. The minister must establish a national language unit in the department and ensure that it is, and so on and so on. So. And then Section 6 lets you its functions. And then Section 7, then it says every national department and so on must establish a language unit and ensure that it is provided resources. And then it goes into the media functions. So my question is actually about that. What is the difference between the two, and how do we make the future?
Yeah. I'm making an example here. For instance, there is Iziko under Arts and Culture. I'm not sure that is a professional competency or what. You also go to Gauteng. There are many libraries there. The libraries that are national competency and libraries that are built by the municipality. Are you saying where the provinces, where the provincial department and provincial entities. This doesn't apply. So that, because, and then what is the rationale to divide? Because people,
sorry, Honorable Price, you know, Honorable Makunyan and Yanola.
Yeah, public, one has an insight, or public would say, but I'm from that library and they helped me in my own language, or they've given me documents that are in my own language. And I come to the same in the library, that is national competence. And then there, we have Zulu, we have Kota, whatever it is. So I'm saying, what is the right now? Is it giving, is it aimed at giving access, or there are limitations in terms of that? Thank you.
Honorable Plaza.
No, no, sir. Thank you very much. I think it's the same question that Honorable Makuyane just raised. So we were just focusing when you said to me, hey, you're making money. The issues about that, we got an understanding. But I want to take it further just with the department. Look, I understand that the units that you established, the language unit, are department-specific units. Stay there at the department. So we were just saying, because people are doing government business with different public entities. That will be maybe your agriculture, your other department. So maybe the part of the executive, it is the discretion of the department if they want to use that unit or not. We're just discussing that. But maybe if the department can take us further. Better, because they would not, the minister would not say, I'm establishing a unit in agriculture, and therefore it must, the Department of Education must have a similar unit. It must, I don't know, it must be a discretion of a other entity to follow suit, whether they want that unit or not, whether they are going to create one person or not. That's what we were trying to discuss there, but I would appreciate if you first clarify us on that.
Thank you, Honourable Member. I think over to the department.
Thanks, and thanks, members, for those questions. Let me start with the distinction between members where they use the example of labels. The only reason why that distinction is made is because of the constitutional powers. We do not have the constitutional powers to legislate over provincial entities, because that becomes provincial, it's a provincial competence. That's the only reason. I mean, ideally, obviously, we'd like the same treatment everywhere, because the public does not make a distinction between a municipal entity or a national entity. But it's just competence. It's the competence. The difference between the national language unit, the crux of the matter is that because the Department of Arts and Culture is responsible for the entire regulation of this act, and in fact, is the department charged with language responsibility in national government. The National Language Unit in the Department of Arts and Culture has what a broader advisory function to the minister responsible. They advise on policy, on strategy, languages, whereas those other departments, the language units in other departments have got a specific function just relating to that department. However, the National Language Unit in the Department of Arts and Culture also does a coordination role. The Act does not necessarily make that, give it that responsibility, but I would imagine that if the minister decides to establish an intergovernmental forum on languages, it should be established through the National Language Unit. If the minister is collecting the report, a lot of that would be done through the National Language Unit. So we've got an overall advisory and functional responsibility supporting the minister in the carrying out of his language function. Thank you.
We will give over to the legal
people. Honourable Chairperson, we have elected Barbara to to spread our story.
you went out for a campaign. you should remember that she is advising Kalanit as you are state.
You know what happens when we argued, in fact we did a pre-certification legal opinion in relation to tagging other aspects of the bill. During the portfolio committee stage, in fact we were in agreement with the department and the parliamentary law advisors that this bill is section 75, you know. That's why I'm still saying that even when we had discussions outside recently, we were in agreement that this is 75, and even the basis of our arguments were the same. That's why we decided that it can be our spokesperson.
I hope you did not forget to do that.
No, ma'am.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, we didn't come to the conclusion that it's 75 lightly. Both our offices and the department as well, it was really just our office considered it for a whole day. We had in-depth discussion. And I think it really comes down to Tongwane reading the constitution, the provisions holistically, not separating them, reading them almost in support of one another so that you get an overall picture, not necessarily reading six and then reading a schedule four. That must be, they're in partnership. And maybe I must just, Tongwane goes to 76, so that's why Tongwane as a case is always our basis. Before Tongwane, as my colleague mentioned, we used prison substance as a test. For that, you looked at the broad purpose of the Act. So you would look at the, say, use of official languages, and that would have set off a little bell in your head, and you would have gone, but overall, this looks at languages, it might affect provinces, therefore it might be 76. But the Constitutional Court is no. You have to go, and regardless of what the Act is named, you have to go look at the actual content. So as my colleague said, when our office did as well, as we went through every clause, and the Constitutional Court said, Parliament, you have to go look whether it substantially affects the interests of provinces. We looked at everyone, but we read Section 6 in connection with Schedule 4. And like the Constitutional Court said, you have to do a holistic purpose of interpretation. So, yes, it is true that Section 6 forces the national government and the provincial government by legislation and other measures must regulate. That must is there. But if the constitutional draft is necessary, our legal interpretation comes in. If the constitutional drafters wanted that and to read as the legislation, there should be one, it should be collective, and it should be 76. It would have left Schedule 4's language policy written unqualified, as it has done with so many others. If you look at Schedule 4, I just want to open here, it leaves environment unqualified, health services. It leaves trade unqualified, tourism. But the boxes specifically to the extent that. So there must, for that reason, be a difference somewhere. And as DG pointed out, this Act, regardless of the use of official languages, if you go look at the actual content, so it's technical, it goes to government business, how national departments, national entities do government business. It doesn't actually ripple substantially down to such an effect. You can say every clause, if you look at it, this is a provincial issue, this is a provincial issue. You must have, when you go through it, if you go through the clauses, you must check a substantial number of them as having a substantial provincial interest. And because it's so technical and because it's government business, we are really of the opinion that it is 75. And like I said, we grappled with this. It's not a conclusion we came to lightly. This Act doesn't take anything away from the provinces. In actual fact, I think this Act encourages provinces to take proactive steps in promoting the arrived of the people, all 11 and even unofficial in sign language. I think the committee took real steps to allow for that.
And I think a question was also raised as to then the inconsistency of one of between two and three. Isn't there a constitutional issue there? Aren't we acting beyond that scope when we say that? The Constitutional Court has also on more than one occasion said you are allowed to have more rights, more protection. You can promote further than the baseline of the Constitution. You're just not allowed to go beyond, below the baseline of the Constitution. So because this act at a national level says three languages, that doesn't make it inconsistent, because if national entities, national departments, in doing government business, working with one another, working with the people, the people still have their individual rights, their rights to interact in the language of their choice. For the national national government must accommodate that. For that, there are provisions. If one individual, any individual, feels that his or her rights aren't being protected, mechanisms are allowed for complaints. So I don't know if I've convinced members, but we are really in agreement, and we would like to leave it there.
Madam Chair, I would just like this whole explanation of both the legal advisors in writing, please. I'm serious. I'd like it in writing, please, exactly the explanation that we need there. This is not acceptable according to our stance on the Constitution. Thank you.
Thanks, Honourable Father. I also just wanted to comment on what Dr. Njokweni has said, that people on the ground are not divided or separated as national, provincial, and local people, and local people. If they see a department that they think they get help from that department, because the department has got a language that it's using, when a person goes to an office, he or she does not know that this is a national office, this is a provincial office, this is a what office. She or he goes just for help in that office, in the area where he resides or where she resides. Or maybe a person comes from another province, visiting another province, going to this office because she needed, or he needed, let me say, she needed help, and she could not get the help from the provincial office or from the local office where she comes from. And she comes to this office, there's a certain act of certain languages that is used there. And then this person comes in and talks the culture, but the ear language that is acceptable or that is used is Setswana and English and Afrikaans maybe. Are you going to make a provision for such people, or does the law make a provision for such instances? Because, for example, the Western Cape is full of people coming from Eastern Cape, and much as how then people are coming from Eastern Cape. Do you have such provision, or is the act going to have, or does the bill have a provision for such instances when they arrive in any of these offices? I'm raising this because I'm from an area where we speak 4 to 6 languages, and when you talk to a person who is speaking Sesotho in the constituency, that person is in trouble or whatever. She or he wants help, and you don't understand, or you don't know what's the language that she speaks. It becomes irritated, and you say, because there will be no one to speak that language in that office, maybe you'll say to that person, come in 2 or 3 days time and look for. But I'm just making an assumption. What is happening in real life in our offices?
All right. Chair, in most kinds of cases, it's required that the section that speaks about language policy, I think it's section 5, says the language policy of a department shall indicate how a person who wants to be served in a language other than the three languages or at least the languages of choice will be served. So that instance will be accommodated under that. the language police will say that we will serve you this particular thing if you speak any of the other languages except these three languages that we have chosen as our language.
Okay.
Let's
see, there is no other follow-up questions and no other person that wants to make it up in the department? No one. Okay. Let me take this opportunity to thank the department for coming and explain and brief us on this bill. We really had many we had many ideas from people around talking about this bill, and we had not really the clue what is happening in the bill because we did not have the bill in our hands. Now we will be able at least to be able to explain some of the things that you have briefed us on the bill. We thank you very much for coming to us, and we thank you. Usually our meetings are in the morning, but you came in the afternoon and you managed my time very well as a department, and as honorable members, you also managed my time very well. I thank you for that. You behaved much better than the other day. I thank you all. The meeting said and then no announcement.
No, General, this is a meeting. What will our decision be on the vote? When will that process be stopped? We have the breathing here,
yes.
So we have the comments must also be tied.
What?
Thank you.